intimate crowd, which is always nice. And I think we should start because people have prepared. I wanted to say that what we're trying to do in this session is sort of tease out some of the sort of more qualitative aspects of women and HIV. And first of all, my name is Marge Cohen, and I'm part of the WISE study, Women Interagency HIV Study, and a lot of the data and work that you'll see today is from that study. But it's a pretty large study that we're going to concentrate on, a Chicago grouping that is an attempt to better understand, in not a quantitative way, what is actually going on in the lives of women with HIV in terms of coping strategies and their relationships with their children and their behaviors related to what we're calling self-silencing and adherence. But first, we thought we'd give you a sense. And the way we wanted to do this was to sort of make sure you felt what the women experience, not just from the qualitative analyses that you'll hear, but from a video we're going to show you and from one of the participants in WISE, so that we could sort of combine how people in WISE are living and share their stories with you, as well as responses to the research that has been done. And I think that's often not done enough. So, Kathleen, are you going to start?
And the WISE is a multi-site NIH-funded study that started in 1993, and over the course of the 21 years has enrolled about 5,000 women nationally. About 75% of the women are HIV infected, and about 25% are seronegative control, pretty much matched for sociodemographic characteristics. And the main cities that were part of the WISE until this last 2 years were two sites in New York, Bronx and Brooklyn, a site in Washington, D.C., a site in L.A., a site in Chicago, and a site in San Francisco. And then the NIH decided, given the sort of epidemiology of HIV in women, that it was important to add sites that represent the southeast section of the United States. So this last 2 years, we've added a site in North Carolina, Miami, a site in Atlanta, and a site in Emory and Jackson, Mississippi. So those sites have started enrolling women, so we'll have the ability to look more closely at differences by region.
So we grew up, I was born in Indiana, we stayed mostly with my grandparents. I remember, well, it was nice having all family around. Aunts, uncles, other cousins, come and see grandma and grandpa.
My father's wanted the best. The best. School to school and everything. But they had a third and fourth grade education. And I cannot do it. But I always told my family, we came out okay to have that, but they couldn't teach her how to read, anything like that. Kept on school at home with the read. We always said we made it.
I ran away a lot. And then at the age of 13, I was in a school for bad girls. I was in the Ivy Home. It's a place in Chicago for children. So who are supposed to be, you know, it's just like the Department of Corrections, but this is only for children.
It was the adults in my life not taking care of me. The adults in my life not teaching me how to take care of myself.
I just always wanted to be around black people. Because in Montreal, where I was raised, it was en français, and Haitians, we didn't consider them our people. So when I was little, I would say, when I grow up, I'm going to move to the States and be around a lot of my people. And when I came here, people treated me so bad.
I looked up one day and I'm like, I would say I lost my childhood before I was 10. I became a parent at 13 because my mother died. And she told me to take care of our baby. And this is everybody's baby, take care of our baby.
But I thought, well, oh gee, you know, I'm a woman now, I'm in a white dress, and I've got this big wedding. My first wedding was huge, and I thought, this is the transition over. Well, what did I know? I was stepping into hell.
And I came in from church, and she said, sit down. I went, what's up? She said, the guy you're engaged to is dying of AIDS. I went, I'm not engaged to him anymore. And then she told me, she says, well, you were with him for 2 years, and you said you stopped using condoms after you became engaged because I thought he was safe. But he wasn't.
Then they started suspecting HIV because of the dementia and all the brain damage that, you know, they felt there was something more going on. So they took the test. And he came out positive.
Finally, we went to about the third or fourth doctor. And as soon as we got there, he said, well, what's your problem? So we told him, this, and this are his symptoms. And he says, have you been tested for HIV? And we said, no. And I didn't even think of that. And I thought, let him test him. I know that, you know. How could that be? We were living, we had our two kids, we had, you know, that would be the furthest thing from my mind. I thought he had cancer.
They came in my room, the doctor, fully done, I mean, from head to toe, looking like astronauts, and told me I had AIDS. They said nothing about HIV positive, and did I want to talk to a chaplain. And you know, if you talk to a chaplain, you have to talk to a chaplain. What that means, you know, you don't have long to live. You know, but I talk to anyone, you know, and I learned mainly from gay men, you know, about this disease.
Got out of the penitentiary, and there was a DCFS worker waiting for me at the gate. And he told me that if I had thought I wanted my kids back, I probably wouldn't get them back because I had HIV. But he brought me to the wrong place. He took me to the Veterans Clinic at Stroger Hospital. And, you know, that was his mistake, taking me to the Veterans Clinic. Because not only did they educate me and about HIV. They educated me about my rights concerning HIV and, you know, that nobody could take my child simply because.
I heard about the radiation center, which was, they had a women's group in there, a women's support group. So I started going to the women's support group at Cook County Hospital, okay?
Because nobody wanted to be with the AIDS patients in Cook County Hospital. So what they do, they trained the AIDS patients to go sit with the AIDS patients. Because we knew that, you know, there's nothing, we knew we needed comfort. So we took these classes and we went and we comforted our people.
And so, I went to the course center, they had programs set up for parenting skills. And so, I still got this certificate, it has Williamson on it. And you go there, you get your certificate, then you take that to DCFS. And then they know you're working towards your goal to get your son back.
She walked down that hall and I said, Jimmy, I need your help. I got to go into treatment. They said I can keep my baby. You know what she was for? And she called for a place and I thought they found a place that day. I've been standing ever since and never had a desire. Because when I say I've been delivered from the disease of addiction, I'm not recovered or recovering. I've been delivered. It's been taken away.
I thought to myself, dear God, just give me, my daughter was 16 and my son was 21 when I was diagnosed. And I thought, dear God, just give me 2 years. That's all I want is 2 years. And here, he's giving me 20.
In the Y studies, I remember one of the questions they asked me was, what is the one thing you fear most? And I remember breaking out crying in the middle of the study when they asked me a question. I was like, watching my kids grow up. And it always stuck in my head. And now my kids are grown. And I have two grandbabies.
And now when they call me and ask me how am I doing, I tell them I'm undetectable, you know. And I'm healthy, you know. I'm just as healthy as you are, you know.
Till today, I'm surviving and enjoying life. And like I tell people, as much as I try to die, seem like the more I try to die, the more I will live. You know, I have drugs and a drink. You know, I try to take myself out and like, okay, well, I'm going to be here for something.
Every once in a while, the news will report, well, it's no longer a death sentence and all that stuff. But it's a lot more complicated than that.
I thought it was a death sentence too when I first found out about it. And it ended up making me a better person. I ended up becoming stronger and being more health conscious and without drug usage and being more mindful and more aware of my body and the things that I need to do for me to stay healthy.
So I'm standing by myself without a husband, but I still have those kids, so I'm finding who I am as a woman now, you know, searching for the last 5 years, I guess. Finding this woman that's somewhere inside of me that I'm like, I'm not even sure who she is or what she would like or what she would like to do, you know, so I'm this late stage, I'm still looking for that woman, but then me.
Okay. Close. Where do we close? This? Yeah. Well, here's X. Okay, thanks. So this was a film that's in process, but is made by Jenny Breer at U of I for sort of a history of what women experienced during the epidemic. What we're going to do now is hear three presentations about interviews that were done with some of the women that you've actually heard their voices in the Chicago Wise, and then we'll hear a response from one of the participants in the study. If I get to the right place, close.